Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Yes, that's me on the 21st of July, 2020. And in the Hebrew calendar, the last day of the month of Tammuz, 5780. It's a very packed program, so I'll start immediately. Many voices in Israel would have us believe that we are facing Hobson's choice, take what's offered by the deal of the century or get nothing at all, which would bring us back to the stagnant status quo. Those voices believe in President Trump's calculation of a fair compromise to satisfy the aspirations of the Palestinian Arabs by handing them 70% of the disputed area of Judea and Samaria that would lead to the establishment of a sovereign Palestinian state within 4 years. At the same time, it would guarantee the continued existence of the major Jewish population centers and so meet Israeli concerns. Such a deal is doomed to failure, because firstly, Trump based his plan on the pattern of his extensive experience in business transactions, which almost always lead to compromise. Secondly, he obviously did not know the Arab business practices and their method of negotiations, which often include indications of compromise without the intention of keeping them, and even outright lies, as is illustrated by his speech to the UN, quoted little later in the program. Thirdly, Trump's so-called vision to improve the lives of the Palestinian and Israeli people suffers from macular deficiency. It does not focus on the central issue, but instead deals with peripheral topics like the settlement issue or geographical considerations. On the other hand, does Israel really need official recognition to exist in its ancient homeland by a recently and fictitiously established entity in its midst? There is a tendency to elevate issues and accentuate the debate around self-evident truth. As I have analyzed in an earlier program, both Israel and the Palestinian Arab leadership, each for their own reasons, raise fundamental objections to any division of the land. The Arabs consider us illegal occupiers, as is evident in the slogans taught at their junior schools, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." There's a lot more on this and other subjects after this break.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Did you know this psalm and many others were composed by a Jewish shepherd and musician who later became a king? Would you like to know some of the inner meanings of psalms to help you connect with God and strengthen your soul? An exciting and easy-to-read book is now available, which will help you do just that. Software for the Soul, Psalms for Everyone, available on Kindle, Audible, and Amazon.com. Software for the Soul.
Modesty at the beach? It isn't just about body image. It's about feeling good. Modest swimsuits, so we don't get burned by the sun.
So we won't get ogled by strangers.
So we'll feel free to express ourselves without the need to expose ourselves.
Let Marcy Modest help you to cover up what you want, how you want.
Made in Israel.
Visit MarcyModest.com. That's M-A-R-S-E-A Modest.com.
And get a 10% discount on your first purchase.
Two new shows on Israel News Talk Radio. The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Joshua Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
How did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel?
Shalom, I'm Natalie Sapinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Here is Walter Bingham.
Palestinian Arab leadership raise fundamental objections to any division of the land. We need not look further back than July 2000, when at the Camp David meeting with President Bill Clinton and Yasser Arafat, our then Prime Minister Ehud Barak attempted to negotiate a peace deal to end the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Israel offered 73% of Judea and Samaria and 100% of the Gaza Strip to end our conflict. The Palestinian negotiators insisted on full sovereignty over all the West Bank with minor adjustments based on UN Resolution 242, which, they claim, asks for full withdrawal to the 1948 armistice lines. Most of the negotiations were verbal, so to my knowledge, there does not exist any written transcript. Palestinian intransigence was the reason for the collapse of the talks. In 2008, Israel tried again for peace with the Palestinian Authority when Israel's Prime Minister Ehud Olmert committed to a near total withdrawal from Judea and Samaria, with Israel retaining just 6.3% of the area comprising the settlement blocks. In compensation, Israel would offer an additional 5.8% of territory, as well as a secure link to the Gaza Strip by way of a tunnel. Olmert also agreed to withdraw from Arab areas in eastern Jerusalem and hand over the old city, including all our holy sites, to an international body. Finally, he agreed to admit 1,000 Arab refugees annually for 5 years. Subsequent lengthy internal discussions on both sides delayed any conclusion, and in 2009, Olmert was replaced by Netanyahu. It is now 20 years since the Camp David summit, and we are practically back to square one. When Ehud Barak was asked recently for his assessment of the failure of Camp David, he said that there was no partner for peace. According to the US negotiator Dennis Ross, the reason for the failure was Arafat's unwillingness to sign a final deal with Israel that would close the door on any of Palestinians' maximum demands, particularly the right of return. Ross claimed that what Arafat really wanted was a one-state solution. So, where do we go from here? Not very far, while the chairman of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, makes different statements in English from his pronouncements in Arabic, which serve to recruit the Arab states to support his aim of a one-state solution. In English, he let it be known that he is willing to resume peace talks with Israel on condition that they are held under the auspices of the Quartet, that's the EU, UN, US, and Russia, while in Arabic he speaks of liberating all of Palestine, and that in a final resolution we would not see the presence of a single Israeli on our lands, Abbas said in a briefing to mostly Egyptian journalists. Yet an estimated 1,900,000 Palestinian Arabs live and work freely and unrestricted among us in Israel. Israel's position is for bilateral talks between the two parties concerned. Here is an example of the near-senile mindset of Mahmoud Abbas. In 2018, in a speech to the UN Security Council, Abbas, or Abu Mazen as he likes to be called, tried to show that he knows the history of this part of the world better than anyone else. He tried to prove this when, during his speech, among other hitherto unknown facts, he disclosed,
"We are the descendants of the Canaanites that lived in the land of Palestine 5,000 years ago and continuously remained there to this day."
In the interests of clarity, I read it here. "We are the descendants of the Canaanites that lived in the land of Palestine 5,000 years ago and continuously remained there to this day. Our great people remain rooted in their land. The Palestinian people built their own cities and homeland and made contributions to humanity and civilization witnessed by the world. They established institutions, schools, hospitals, cultural organizations, theaters, libraries, newspapers, publishing houses, economic organizations, businesses and banks with wide regional and international influence. All of this existed before the Balfour Declaration issued by the British government in 1917, a declaration by which those who did not own, giving to those who had no right. The British government bears responsibility for the catastrophic consequences inflicted on the Palestinian people as a result." End of quote. How is it possible that a congregation of international diplomats could quietly sit through the fantasies of a man whose cognitive abilities appeared questionable and applauded his presentation? Is it any wonder that Abbas, who with a straight face presents those fantasies as facts, cannot be taken as a serious partner for peace by Israel? Is it any wonder that after Palestinian Arab violence against the Jewish state, ever since its re-emergence, and after several efforts to talk peace since Oslo 1993, Israel is now considering to extend sovereignty over the disputed areas? Yet the Palestinian Arab claims are accepted by many leaders of the international community. Take, for instance, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Boris Johnson, who said that Israel's plans to annex parts of the occupied West Bank would be, quote, "fatal to the prospects of Israeli-Palestinian peace," end of quote. Where was the peace before Israel entered the West Bank in 1967? Should Boris Johnson not rather be concerned to settle their own dispute with Argentina over the Falkland Islands before interfering in Israeli internal matters? Yes, Judea and Samaria, erroneously called West Bank, constitutes the heartland of our little country. And guess what? In a straight line, the Falkland Islands are 13,000 kilometers from London, or more than 16 hours flying time. Yet in 1982, the UK fought a 10-week-long war with Argentina to retain that territory. So people in glass houses, etc. Johnson continued, "Acquisition of territory by force has no place in 2020 and must have commensurate consequences." Well, declaring sovereignty over its own land is far removed from acquisition. Acquisition is what Turkey did in northern Cyprus, an invasion that is ignored by the international community. And that warning should be directed to the Russians, who acquired the Crimea and part of the Ukraine by force. Or is it easier to always censure Israel? Then there is President Emmanuel Macron of France, who warned that the actions of the Jewish state would damage ties with the European Union and, of course, with France. He would do better to concentrate on the internal social problems in France and the rising anti-Semitism that is causing many of Europe's once largest Jewish population to flee France and settle in Israel. Germany, with its recent history, has greater reason to support the Jewish state than to criticize the actions for its self-preservation. Never again is our motto, and Israel will do everything in its power to justify it. I want to mention just one more. Why does the international community ignore the requests for independence of the Catalans, who are recognized as a nation and lived in a defined area in northeastern Spain for centuries, with their own culture, their own language, and even their thriving capital, Barcelona? Yet the fake claims of the so-called Arab Palestinians are accepted. It's do as I say, not as I do, are the morals of the Spanish government. Month before elections for a new government, the pollsters get busy making their predictions. This is particularly noticeable when looking at the minefield of American politics. That's more a game than information on which the party's campaign managers can base their strategy. I strongly believe that in the United States, with its diverse cultures and ethnic origins, a so-called sample of 1,000 people cannot be representative of the whole nation. Furthermore, unlike face-to-face questioning by choosing various socioeconomic areas, today's hit and miss by phone numbers does not guarantee a fair cross-section. That's why the 2016 presidential election produced a result that was different from the cut-and-dried expectations. Not only does the interviewer know if he really speaks with a voter, but unlike a face-to-face encounter, he also has no way to judge the honesty of the reply. So I set no store by any polls, except the one on election day. It is known that when standing in the booth, many people revert to their traditional view, which is different from their more recent intention. The voting is also influenced by the weather and last-minute drastic political developments. Lastly, it is a means by politically motivated pollsters to raise your concern that your chosen candidate might lose and therefore encourage you to vote. But it is the floating voter that decides the election. We've got to go into another break, but keep it here.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar, she's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
The return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel was prophesied in the Bible thousands of years ago and is coming true today. Shalom. Join me, Josh Wander, on Israel Unplugged. Listen in as we delve into the spiritual and physical aspects of the Jewish return to Zion. We'll discuss the biblically mandated, historic, and of course practical understandings of this incredible transition from exile to redemption. That's Israel Unplugged, every Monday on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Now, here is Walter Bingham.
It is the floating voter that decides the election. All the pundits and political commentators, yours truly included, make hit and miss predictions. The moral of this story is, don't raise your blood pressure because you can only do your duty and que sera, sera. For Americans, it is, however, worth getting excited about the left-wing extremists who infiltrate and then take over every legitimate protest movement. The outrage over the killing of George Floyd was the trigger to adopt the slogan Black Lives Matter for their unconstitutional activities. Of course, Black Lives Matter, just differently expressed, it is nothing new. Generations have fought for it. How else was slavery abolished and segregation made illegal? Its protagonists were peaceful people. The extremist elements of the new left in America are searching in ever wider circles to change the fabric of society. Now they found that the name Redskins of the Washington NFL team no longer fits their perception of political correctness and racial justice. So as a result of protests and mounting pressure from its main sponsor, FedEx, who holds the naming rights of their stadium, and despite the team owner's statements some years ago that they will never change the name, they have now decided to drop the Redskin name and logo. There are more teams now considering to change their name. It's all part of the far-reaching tentacles of the George Floyd revolution. A statement issued by the National Congress of American Indians read, quote, "We commend the Washington NFL team for eliminating a brand that disrespected, demeaned, and stereotyped all Native people," end of quote. There are, however, many Native American voices who are not offended by the name. Now the statues of Christopher Columbus and George Washington have been toppled, will the capital city of the United States also be renamed so that soon the history of the United States will be unrecognizable? The elections in November will decide the future of that great country. Will it remain the leader of the free world or become a slave to a new radical socialism, a society where the mob rules and where there is no protection for the law-abiding citizen? Prime Minister Netanyahu is afraid of his own shadow. It is now becoming clear that he believes his political survival to be dependent on the approval of the United States rather than the citizens of Israel. He has misled the Israeli public, who expected action on sovereignty on or soon after July 1st. Both he and Knesset Speaker and Chief Negotiator with the White House, Yariv Levin of Likud, have misled the public. If Israel considers it important to wait for the final green light from the Trump administration, then it must realize that the window of opportunity is short, considering the forthcoming election in November. Here is Nadia Matar, co-chair of Women in Green, explaining the reason why it is now the time to extend sovereignty over our land.
Shalom from Gush Etzion and the beautiful Judean hills between Jerusalem and Hebron. I speak on behalf of the Sovereignty Movement, which I have the honor to co-chair with Yehudit Katzover, one of the pioneers of the renewed Jewish settlement in Hebron. Sovereignty, what is it, why is it, and how should it be done correctly? 1967, the Arab countries are getting ready to attack and destroy 19-year-old tiny Israel. A miracle happens. Within 6 days, the Israeli army liberates the missing parts of our homelands. Judea, Samaria, the Gaza Strip, Jerusalem, Sinai, the Golan Heights. But it is an incomplete victory. What should have been done on the seventh day was to officially include all the areas that we had returned to into the state of Israel. Israel should have immediately applied its sovereignty over the entire area. But unfortunately, the government decided not to decide and created a civil administration to administer these areas till a decision will be reached. Thank God, for other people, it was clear what should be done. God had brought us back home where our forefathers had lived for thousands of years, to the land which we are commanded to settle, plant, and flourish. Clearly, we must renew Jewish life in our God-given biblical heartland. Dozens of pioneers set out to resettle the land. Kiryat Arba, Hebron, Shiloh, Betel, Elon Moreh, Efrat, and many more Jewish communities sprung up. 53 years later, 500,000 Jews now live in Judea and Samaria, but its legal status is still not clear. The left and the Arabs came up some years ago with a two-state solution. Very quickly, after we buried 1,500 Israeli victims of Oslo, the Israeli public understood that the idea to create a Palestinian state in our heartland was a suicidal one. So if we say no to a Palestinian state, what is our yes? What is our vision? That is when we set out and created the Sovereignty Movement in 2011 to promote the application of Israeli sovereignty over Judea and Samaria in order to once and for all make it clear that between the sea and the Jordan River, there can be only one national sovereign entity, the State of Israel. Together with many other public figures, organizations, and politicians, we promoted the sovereignty plan for the past 9 years till it reached the Prime Minister's office and the White House. How happy we were when we heard that President Trump spoke of the historic rights of the Jewish people in its lands and consequently the legality of the Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria. Finally, an American administration that is not scared to side on the side of truth and morality. But then came the deal of the century, a document that totally contradicts these values, a document whose basic premise we cannot accept, that the Arab Palestinians have a legitimate desire for self-determination and that Israel should give parts of its homeland to allow territory for a future Palestinian state. Israeli sovereignty can be applied to only a tiny fraction of the area, while the remaining huge areas will be designated for the establishment of a Palestinian state. And we ask what happened. Who revived the suicidal two-state solution when it was not only buried in Israel, but was also erased from the Republican platform by dear friends of Israel who understood its dangers? What kind of sovereignty is this? If the Jewish people have historic and biblical rights over 100% of the territory, why are the Arabs entitled to 70% or to anything of our land? Recognizing the right of those who robbed the land from its rightful owners is a fatal blow to morality and justice and a capitulation to terror. The fact that them receiving a state on our land is conditioned by many restrictions is not serious, for we know from the Oslo Accords and all other agreements that over time these preconditions that they have to meet, they evaporate. When we understood that the dangers of the deal of the century also include the possible division of Jerusalem, the handing over of parts of the Negev, the freezing and choking of dozens of communities, we launched a campaign titled Yes to Sovereignty, No to a Palestinian State, calling upon our Prime Minister and our government to apply sovereignty over Judea and Samaria, but unrelated to the deal of the century, without any agreement to a Palestinian state, nor to any compromises. Our leaders must act on the basis of Israel's interests, even if our friends overseas don't approve at the beginning. At some point, they too will understand that even just talking about the creation of a Palestinian state goes against the interests of Israel and America. Asking Israel to compromise, even in theory, will continue to inflame the hope of those Arabs that they will gain more and more by means of terrorism. The sovereignty that we are talking about is a sovereignty in accordance with the Zionist vision, historic justice and Israeli interests, with responsibility that will bring stability and prosperity to Jews and Arabs alike, that will enable the dispersion of the population and the establishment of many new cities and towns for the millions of Jews that will come on Aliyah, a sovereignty that will respect the individual rights of the non-Jewish minority as long as they respect the laws of the Jewish state. A sovereignty without the poison of a Palestinian state that not only the majority of the Jews do not want, but also the majority of the Arabs, who tell us how they prefer residency under Israeli sovereignty rather than citizenship in a corrupt, terrorist Palestinian state. The day of the application of real Israeli sovereignty over Judea and Samaria will be the seventh day of the Six-Day War. Application of sovereignty and its correct implementation will conclude that war with determination of the true status of the land of Israel as the land of the Jewish people. Our generation was chosen for this momentous time. With faith and conviction, we will construct this latest link in the chain of Zionism, the link of sovereignty. This is our mission, and with God's help, we are capable of accomplishing it. Anybody who will be part of doing this correctly together with us will be blessed, for blessed are those who bless Israel.
So, don't let sovereignty dissolve into the ideological dimension. Benjamin Netanyahu always strove and succeeded to be popular as a statesman among his contemporaries in much of the international community. But in Israel, his popularity is now at a very low ebb. He seemed to be upsetting several different segments of the population. The Black Flag movement demonstrate against the unity government, condemns Benny Gantz for joining with Netanyahu, claiming that it destroys democracy. Their aim is to remove Netanyahu from the prime minister's chair. And then there are the Haredim, the ultra-Orthodox communities, who block intersections to bring attention to the fact that, as they claim, they are discriminated against because several of their residential areas are repeatedly locked down. The fact is, however, that their lifestyle of communal study and community practices spreads infection. Early last month, the leader of the Yamina party, Naftali Bennett, predicted that Netanyahu will not go forward with the sovereignty plan, despite his repeated vows in recent months. Right on the button. Ayelet Shaked, also of the Yamina party, said, "It's our obligation to apply sovereignty." I have to say it, Netanyahu lied. And this is the first time that I admitted this. How can I support a leader who does not keep his word? I'm of course not privy to the reasons for his change of mind. I can only speculate on the basis of his past activities. And they don't look too clean. He now has a golden opportunity to redeem himself and act like Ben-Gurion did when he declared the State of Israel.
In a time where feelings have become fact, where rational thought and common sense has disappeared, one man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Political Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American time, 7 a.m. Israeli time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On the Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Netanyahu now has a golden opportunity to redeem himself and act like Ben-Gurion did when he declared the State of Israel. In the face of opposition that was fearing consequences, Ben-Gurion kept the time and date secret, instructed his committee to do likewise, and in the afternoon of May 14, 1948, the 5th of Iyar 5708, David Ben-Gurion, the executive head of the World Zionist Organization, chairman of the Jewish Agency for Palestine, proclaimed the establishment of the State of Israel. The Hatikva followed. There was no further discussion allowed, and Ben-Gurion said, "The meeting is adjourned." And with that, the state was reborn. He did not allow himself to be dissuaded by the weak and meek elements who were more concerned with the fear of Arab attacks then with a historic opportunity to fulfill the millennial-long Jewish aspirations to return to Eretz Israel. It seems that today it is Netanyahu who never misses an opportunity to miss an opportunity, to use the famous words of Abba Eban. Netanyahu, who is a master of political balancing acts, has this time met his match. He has fallen between two stools. On the one hand, he is pressured by his economic ministers to relax the restrictions on opening businesses, and by the educational establishment to open schools, which would also help the economy by letting parents go to work, as well as allow students to catch up on their education. On the other hand, as a result of repeated government instruction changes compounded by conflicting so-called expert opinions and the relatively low COVID death rate, the general public has become disillusioned with Netanyahu's handling of the health crisis. They are joining the ever-growing chorus for Netanyahu to resign. With regard to the health crisis, and the health crisis only, I'm quite sure that whatever he does on the basis of advice, he means sincerely and acts to the best of his knowledge and belief, because a healthy nation will appreciate his achievements of the past and be inclined not to judge him so harshly. Replicas of the Declaration of Independence are freely available in Hebrew, but we don't often hear the precise English translation, so I thought you might like to hear it. Each time I read it, I get emotional. I quote, "The land of Israel was the birthplace of the Jewish people. Here, their spiritual, religious, and political identity was shaped, and here they first attained to statehood, created cultural values and national and universal significance, and gave to the world the eternal Book of Books. After being forcibly exiled from their land, the people kept faith with it throughout their dispersion and never ceased to pray and hope for their return to it and for the restoration in it of their political freedom. Impelled by this historic and traditional attachment, Jews strove in fifth generation to re-establish themselves in their ancient homeland. In recent decades, they returned in their masses, pioneers, defiant returnees, and defenders. They made deserts bloom, revised the Hebrew language, built villages and towns, and created a thriving community, controlling its own economy and culture, loving peace but knowing how to defend itself, bringing the blessings of progress to all the country's inhabitants and aspiring towards independent nationhood. In the year 5657, that's 1897, at the summons of the spiritual father of the Jewish state, Theodor Herzl, the first Zionist Congress convened and proclaimed the right of the Jewish people to national rebirth in its own country. This right was recognized in the Balfour Declaration of the 2nd of November 1917 and reaffirmed in the mandate of the League of Nations, which, in particular, gave international sanction to the historic connection between the Jewish people and Eretz Israel and to the right of the Jewish people to rebuild its national home. The catastrophe which recently befell the Jewish people, the massacre of millions of Jews in Europe, was another clear demonstration of the urgency of solving the problem of the homelessness by re-establishing in Eretz Israel the Jewish state, which would open the gates to the homeland wide to every Jew and confer upon the Jewish people the status of a fully privileged member of the community of nations. Survivors of the Nazi Holocaust in Europe, as well as Jews from other parts of the world, continued to migrate to Eretz Israel, undaunted by difficulties, restrictions, and dangers, and never ceased to assert their right to a life of dignity, freedom, and honest toil in their national homeland. In the Second World War, the Jewish community of this country contributed its full share to the struggle of the freedom and peace-loving nations against the forces of Nazi wickedness and, by the blood of its soldiers and its war effort, gained the right to be reckoned among the peoples who founded the United Nations. You're listening to the English translation of Israel's Declaration of Independence. On the 29th of November 1947, the United Nations General Assembly passed a resolution calling for the establishment of a Jewish state in Eretz Israel. The General Assembly required the inhabitants of Eretz Israel to take such steps as were necessary on their part for the implementation of that resolution. This recognition by the United Nations of the right of the Jewish people to establish their state is irrevocable. The right is the natural right of the Jewish people to be masters of their own fate, like all other nations, in their own sovereign state. Accordingly, we, members of the People's Council, representatives of the Jewish community of Eretz Israel and of the Zionist movement, are here assembled on the day of the termination of the British Mandate over Eretz Israel, and by virtue of our natural and historic right, and on the strength of the resolution of the United Nations General Assembly, hereby declare the establishment of a Jewish state in Eretz Israel to be known as the State of Israel. We declare that, with effect from the moment of the termination of the mandate being tonight, the eve of the Sabbath, the 6th of Iyar 5708, or 15th of May 1948, until the establishment of the elected regular authorities of the state in accordance with the constitution which shall be adopted by the elected constituent assembly not later than the 1st of October 1948, the People's Council shall act as a provisional council of state and its executive organ. The People's Administration shall be the provisional government of the Jewish state, to be called Israel. The State of Israel will open for Jewish immigration and for the ingathering of the exiles. It will foster the development of the country for the benefit of all its inhabitants. It will be based on freedom, justice, and peace, as envisaged by the prophets of Israel. It will ensure complete equality of social and political rights to all its inhabitants, irrespective of religion, race, or sex. It will guarantee freedom of religion, conscience, language, education, and culture. It will safeguard the holy places of all religions, and it will be faithful to the principles of the Charter of the United Nations. The State of Israel is prepared to cooperate with the agencies and representatives of the United Nations in implementing the resolution of the General Assembly of 29th of November 1947, and will take steps to bring about the economic union of the whole of Eretz Israel. We appeal to the United Nations to assist the Jewish people in the building up of its state and to receive the State of Israel into the community of nations. We appeal, in the very midst of the onslaught launched against us now for months, to the Arab inhabitants of the State of Israel to preserve peace and participate in the upbuilding of the state on the basis of full and equal citizenship and due representation in all provisional and permanent institutions. We extend our hand to all neighboring states and their peoples in an offer of peace and good neighborliness, and appeal to them to establish bonds of cooperation and mutual help with the sovereign Jewish people settled in its own land. The State of Israel is prepared to do its share in the common effort for the advancement of the entire Middle East. We appeal to the Jewish people throughout the diaspora to rally round the Jews of Eretz Israel in the tasks of immigration and upbuilding, and to stand by them in the greatest struggle for the realization of the age-old dream, the redemption of Israel. Placing our trust in the Almighty, we affix our signatures to this proclamation at this session of the Provisional Council of State on the soil of the homeland in the city of Tel Aviv on the Sabbath Eve, the 5th day of Iyar 5708, the 14th of May 1948. That was the Declaration of Independence signed by the members of the Council of State. Almost unnoticed, in the midst of the havoc caused by COVID-19 and overshadowed by the sovereignty debate, Israel had another technical success. A few days ago, Israel successfully launched the Ofek-16 satellite into space, an electro-optical observation platform with advanced capabilities. It is equipped with a high-quality camera developed and manufactured by Elbit Systems. One day after the launch, its observation camera was operated for the first time, showing high-quality images of the city of Yehud in central Israel. In the coming weeks, engineering teams will complete the rigorous tests and prepare the satellite for operational use.
Fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars.
Everybody's entitled to dream once in a while. And finally, did you know that Benjamin Netanyahu was born Ben Zion Milaikovsky? His grandfather, Rabbi Nathan Milaikovsky, escaped from Poland to Palestine in 1920. Unfortunately, I cannot escape the tyranny of the clock and must end here. I hope that among the many items, there were some that found resonance with you. I'm always interested to hear your views, so please write to walter.israelnationalradio@gmail.com and you will always get my personal reply. God willing, I'll be back again next week, same time, same place, with another selection of the latest from Israel and the rest of the Jewish world as I see it. Until then, this is Walter Bingham wishing you and yours a safe and healthy week. As you know, COVID-19 has returned with a vengeance, and the elderly who are most vulnerable must stay home. Therefore, it is your humanitarian duty to ensure that your elderly neighbors are comfortable and have what they need. Please don't leave it to someone else. Visit them today. Thank you. Goodbye.
Get the inside news on Israel. At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Morris from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.